On this episode of Inside Boxing Live, we have a lot to talk about in the heavyweight division. Joe Joyce, the juggernaut, put on a performance of the year candidate. We're also talking about the lightweight division. Lightweight division, a lot of these guys are chirping at each other. Shakur Stevenson is now a lightweight. We have our list this week. It is the top five boxing, best boxing nicknames of all time. And I can't forget, we're talking to Sebastian Fundora, the towering inferno, 6'7". 154 pounds, jam loaded episode. Let's roll. What is up, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of Inside Boxing Live, presented by John Boy Media. I am Dan Canobio, joined as always by former WBO junior lightweight, welterweight, 140-pound champion, Chris Algieri, who is battling Mother Nature down in South Florida. As you can see, he is, I don't even know what this is. That something to lose weight? We have a hurricane down in South Florida. It has not stopped Chris Algieri from joining the podcast today.
No, I'm still here. It's we got 150 mile an hour, 55 mile an hour gale force winds. We got sideways rain. We got flooding everywhere, but I'm still here with you guys talking boxing, because where else would I be?
He's a dedicated podcaster. I love the outfit, but you definitely also wore that to lose, like, to get down to 140.
Yeah, I've worn this several times. This is nothing new.
It's off with it.
It's actually not that bad where I'm at. I'm actually in the nice part of Florida. We don't deal with hurricanes.
Yeah, honestly, in all seriousness, well, damn, some of those videos that are coming out, Naples getting destroyed right now. I saw a house floating down the water. I mean, it's hurricane season. You're in Florida. You know, you didn't want to live in New York anymore. I'm in Florida, and Floridians, this is what you deal with. You deal with hurricanes.
Yeah, but you go to the nice places like where I live, and there's nothing. It's barely been raining outside.
That's wild. I know. We were worried. The John Boy Media office was worried. Ronnie is here, producer Ronnie. Who's also battling in his own way. He's a little under the weather.
He looks it.
He does look it. 22-year-old battling through a little bit of not COVID, right, Ronnie?
I remember my first beer.
No, it is not COVID. I'm fighting my own demons here, where there's no hurricane just yet, but it's something that I can't handle. I still came into work today, Dan. So
he did show up. He was at the office. It was like it was the Michael Jordan flu game. For Ronnie, he came in. He made it be known right away that he was sick. He had the kind of like you did, just with the hood. He had the hood with the hat, Yankee hat over it. Usually, Ronnie comes in the office. He's bouncing around. He's life of the office. It was just like head down,
low energy.
It was weird. It threw me off. It made me sad.
And now he's in a room with bunk beds. That's also indicative of how he's feeling. So,
yeah, 22 years old.
I thought it was a dorm, not a dorm. That's he shares it with his brother, right? Your brother's off at Brown University, so clearly
Ivy League brother.
Are you top bunk, bottom bunk? How do you guys figure that out?
When I was a child, during my childhood, top bunk. Nowadays, I'm bottom bunk.
You got to be.
I'm matured. I'm a grown man.
That's man shit. Yeah.
Especially if there's no one sleeping on, like, it's just you. You got to take bottom.
Yeah.
That'd be weird.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk some boxing. Oh wait, before we get to the boxing. Big news. If we had breaking news music, we would play it. I won my parlay last week. Take that, Chris Algieri. Take that, haters.
The streak has been broken. This will go down in history.
I picked, who did I pick? I picked Serrano to win by decision. She did. I picked, what was my other pick? I picked Shakur Stevenson by decision, which was a little dicey and a little hairy, because we're going to talk about that in a little bit. I thought that Conceição was going to be out by the sixth round or seventh round, the way he was looking. But Shakur, we'll talk about that in a second, didn't go for the knockout. And then Serrano Cruz to one of the easiest decisions ever. That looked like it was a damn sparring match. But I won. I bucked the trend. Narrative is over. I am now one for my last one. DraftKings parlays. Can't take this from me. I'm going to celebrate until we're ready for our next one. I don't know when that is.
Interestingly enough, you breaking your drought has caused my first loss, because I was betting that you were not going to pick
So you faded me.
Correct. I've been fading you since the beginning. So I've been all the way on.
You faded your own co-host.
I'm a smart guy. You know, I'm just going with
You've always been smart with your money, so that I understand that makes a lot of sense. All right, so let's get into it. Like we said, I'm going to flip a coin. Our two main topics before we get to Sebastian Fundora interview is the heavyweight division and it's the lightweight division. It's two of the divisions right now that are in the news because we don't really have much going on this week because there are really zero meaningful fights this weekend, which is kind of crazy. All right, so heads, we're talking heavyweights. Tails, we're talking lightweights. Tails it is. So we'll start with the lightweights. Chris, you were watching the fight. I was watching along too, and I was working CompuBox. Shakur Stevenson missed weight. He missed weight when we were live during our last show, or towards the end of the show. He comes in, I think, a pound and a half over. That wasn't a great look for him. Gets into the ring, and I thought, wow, you know, he's starting to really sit down on his punches. He's going for it. Thought he looked powerful in there for the first six rounds. And then the second half of the fight happens, and we're looking at low blows. He's flipping him over like an MMA fighter. Can't get him out of there. One could say so. I was clearly hurt and was clearly on jelly legs, in my opinion. How would you rate that performance from Stevenson? Because I thought first six, he looked like, you know, this is maybe a guy that's growing into his power. Last six, I think it raised a lot more questions than answers.
I mean, I saw it a little differently than you. I mean, I obviously, you know, Shakur was dominant throughout. I think a lot of people maybe who are watching the fight don't realize how good Conceição is. And for me, looking at that fight, seeing as someone who's with the pedigree of Conceição, and I've seen him fight before, I called the fight against Valdez, also his amateur pedigree. He's a phenomenal fighter. And Shakur was able to make him completely inept. And at several times throughout the bout made him look honestly amateurish. He was falling over his front foot. I was telling a friend of mine, if you split the screen and you saw each fighter in their own, it looked like two different fights. Shakur was fighting slow, methodical, strong, making everything work. Conceição, fast, fighting so over his front foot, off balance, falling all over himself. And Shakur was just there, taking the range, using his shoulder movement, his defense. I mean, for the first six rounds, he looked absolutely phenomenal. In the seventh round, he really put a beating on Conceição, which you mentioned. Looked like he was going to get him out of there. The doctors thought so, too. They came in the corner. They're asking him if he wanted to continue, which was probably very premature, but also shows you how dominant Shakur was. Next two rounds, Conceição comes out, throws more punches. Is he effective? In the sense that he was, yeah, aggressive and he threw more shots, sure. If you're going to give him two rounds, it was probably those. But from then on out, yeah, it got a little ugly. Shakur pulled off the gas. But then the 12th round comes out, looks like he wants to finish it. He probably could have done that at any point earlier. Doesn't get the stoppage, but was a dominant performance either way. I'm still super impressed with the fight. I'm super impressed with Shakur's performance. I thought that what he did against the guy that he did it in the way that he did it was very impressive. So I don't know. I'm still super high on Shakur, especially after this fight.
Yeah, I mean, to the, you obviously have a better eye than most when it comes to this, but you can't deny the first six rounds. You know, he looked like he was going to erase a lot of the doubts that people have with him. Obviously, we know he's a defensive wizard, and I think Conceição outlanded him in the first round, but after that, it was all Stevenson. Stevenson landed 199 total punches. That's the most in his career. He landed, let's see, almost 50% of his power shots. He landed a career high amount of body shots. That's the big thing in this fight, which I think really helped him. Conceição looked huge in there. He was going to move. We talked about this last week. As an amateur fighter, it's what they do. They move around in there, and he took that away from him. And he took it away from him pretty impressively with the body work. A lot of it was some of them were low blows. I think he actually got a point deducted too. So I think Stevens, that's the first time.
It was I thought it was early, but yeah, he did. Yeah.
Right. Like a first time in his career. Obviously, he first time he misses weight, first time he gets a point taken away from him. I mean, these are like, we talked last week about how this guy's had a perfect career and doesn't have a lot of faults. I mean, these are small little things. But yeah, you know, to your eye, you know, the well-trained eye, there was a thing, little things in there that he did great. But to the masses, and I wouldn't say that he has haters, Shakur. I would say that there are people that are like, you know what, like, you need to pump your brakes. You know, we posted a clip.
Doubters, not haters, doubters.
Exactly. Yeah. You said, you put out the clip, or we put out the clip, and you said, you know, this is the closest thing to Floyd Mayweather. And, you know, some people
got a lot of heat for that, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah. A few people were like, you know, wait a second. Let's pump the brakes a little bit. Like, you know, this guy isn't that great. You know, there's guys on, you
cool.
know, guys.
Cool. In his Mark my words. Write it down. It's on Twitter now. So it's
it's on Twitter. So it's written in stone. But I thought that he had a chance to get this guy out of there. I thought Jose Sal's legs, he just was on skates. He had no legs towards the end of that fight. He did win a few rounds late, can say so, but that's when he was starting to throw more. So Stevenson, you know, as we know, when a fighter throws more, you have more chances to counter, more openings. I thought Stevenson could have erased all doubts for the doubters, could have said, you know what, I'm going up to 135 by knocking out one of the most, you know, one of the a tougher guy, a bigger guy, a gold medalist, you name it, and erased all doubt. And now we're talking serious momentum. But this is the thing with Stevenson. He doesn't really want to go for the knockout. And why do you think that is, Chris?
You know, so we spoke about this off air. I think Shakur, and he showed that in the fight, he's strong. He's physically strong for the weight class. He's got power, you know, and he doesn't have one punch power. Most people don't. And even most knockout artists don't. A lot of guys have a mentality that gets the stoppage. Shakur does not have that mentality. He doesn't have that mindset. He's not willing to take one to get one. To give one. So that goes a long way when it comes to knockouts and getting guys out of there. Shakur had, like you said, he had the opportunity to push the limit and probably get Conceição out of there. Seventh round, I mean, he landed a ton of punches. He had Conceição reeling. Like I said, the doctors were looking at him in the corner like, hey, do you want to continue? If Shakur had stepped on the gas there, there was a really good chance that he was going to get him out of there. I even said it on Twitter. I'm like, I'm smelling a Shakur stoppage because he was so on top of Conceição with the body work, with the, you know, consistent punches. And he just let off the gas. He doesn't have that mentality to take those extra risks. That second half of the fight, you're going to get hit more. But if you're willing to take those shots in order to get a guy out of there, you'll do it. And a lot of knockout punchers or guys who get stoppages will fight that way. Shakur's not that way. I don't think it's a power thing. I don't think it's a strength thing. I think he has that. Obviously, he doesn't have the one punch power, but he doesn't have the mentality to get those stoppages out there. Does not take away from how goddamn good he is, because he is that good. And his defense is really where is the backbone of how good he really is. And he's able to use that. Now he's mixing it with aggressive offense. I think he's a hard guy to beat, even if he doesn't get the stoppage.
Yeah, a lot of guys in the division, or now his new division, 135. Let's talk about that. We weren't able to discuss it on the show because it happened after we went off the air. Came in 100 and I think 1.6 over, which is a lot. It might be a lot to a casual boxing fan, but 1.6 that's a significant amount. I mean, almost like he did, was like, you know what, I'm not even
for a title fight. That's a tremendous amount. Yeah,
right. So that's big for a number of reasons. Number one, it's never a good look to lose your belts on the scale. Never a good look. It's the ultimate sign of professionalism is to make weight. You know this. So he doesn't make weight.
It's the first fight. It's always the first fight. Make the weight.
Right. First fight. Yeah, exactly. Get on that scale. Make the weight. You know, it's what you're contractually obligated to do. Your counterpart is doing the same thing to get down there. It's just the right thing to do. Everyone knows that. So he comes in overweight, loses two of his belts. He was going to move up to 135 anyway, something I said. That is the case. He was, but I'm sure he did not want to do it like this. What do you look into it? I feel like he was given almost like a pass where Tank Davis comes in 0.5 and then he goes and makes the weight. You know, an hour later, he's ripped apart. David Benavidez misses weight, ripped apart. Still to this day, it's held. People hold it over his head. I feel like Shakur kind of got a pass here. Do you think it's because he's going to 135? I think it's because he's had such a good career so far and accomplished so much. What do you make of the whole missing weight for Shakur?
Yeah, it's because of who he is and where he's at in his career at this point. If that happened a couple of fights ago, it's a whole different thing. If that happened before he beats Valdez, if that happened before he stops Jamel Herring, he's going to get raked over the coals. But because of who he is and where he is and the momentum that he has in his career currently, yeah, it's going to get brushed under the rug. You're with Top Rank. Top Rank's going to take care of you. You come in overweight. You're getting rid of the belts anyway. You're moving up to much, you know, bigger, brighter pastures. People are going to sweep that under the rug and kind of forget about it. No one's ever going to talk about that in a couple of years when, you know, he's a multiple division world champion. It sucks, but hey, man, that's the way the cookie crumbles.
That's showbiz, right? That's boxing. That's
That's showbiz. That's not boxing. That's showbiz. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sucks, but it is what it is.
Right. So Shakur now the lightweight. He has now entered the 135-pound division. Division ruled by Devin Haney after the fight. He was asked, who is the guy at 135? He said, it's Devin Haney. I mean, he has all the belts. If you don't say Devin Haney, you're simply a hater. So that's the deal at 135. Obviously, there's a ton of good fighters at 135. There's Vasily Lomachenko, who is going to be fighting Jermaine Ortiz at the Garden at the end of October. He's supposed to be lined up to face the winner of Haney Kambosos. We all expect Haney to win that fight. Then there's guys like Brian Garcia, who we, you know, kind of goes back and forth between 135 and 140. They're beefing now on Twitter today. And then you got, who am I missing? Oh, Tank Davis, who I think stylistically, Tank versus Shakur is a way more exciting fight to me than Tank than Shakur versus Haney, which I think they're kind of mirror each other. It'd be a great like battle in terms of like, you know, technical battle. But I think just like the power of Tank versus the elusiveness of Shakur Stevenson. You know, I'll ask you first, like, which fight do you want to see the most? And then which fight do you think Top Rank gives Shakur at 135?
Well, first of all, I'd like to respectfully disagree about them looking similar in terms of styles with Shakur and Devin. Devin's way more offensive. You know, he's a jabber. You know, he's more of a boxer puncher, even though he's not a puncher. I actually think Shakur probably has more power than Devin, but Devin fights
there.
But Devin fights in a much more aggressive stance. He fights out of that, you know, a boxer puncher using that left jab. He pumps it. He's got a lot of speed. Shakur is much more of a defensive back footer fighter, southpaw, using his shoulder rolls, using that distance. His judge of range is fantastic. That fight will be interesting because it'll be a chess match. And the pace will be set fast by Haney, but slowed by Shakur. So that fight could end up a lot of different ways, but most likely is going to be a very tactical battle. But I do agree with what you're saying about Tank. I think that is a great matchup in terms of differences in style, and not even as much as the power interests me about Tank, it's his explosiveness. Mm-hmm. Because defensive fighters, they want everything slowed down, right? Because they see everything coming. When a fight is really fast and pushed, the pace is really pushed, and there's a lot of guys who are throwing a ton of punches. That's where you're supposed to fight counter punchers, is throw combinations. It makes it much more difficult, you know. And Tank is so explosive, he can make up for, one, being shorter than a lot of everyone he fights. Two, also not being defensively minded or filling that gap. I've always thought that him and Lomachenko would be really interesting because I think his explosiveness might beat some of that defensive prowess of Lomachenko. So I kind of see that too with Shakur. I think that's the most interesting fight out there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. Anyone with Lomachenko. I mean, Lomachenko.
Yeah, Loma's awesome.
Right. Mm-hmm. Lomachenko at Top Rank, the name recognition, his style. It seems like Haney has the inside track to Lomachenko. That seems like a done deal. Yeah. That's happening after Haney probably outpoints Kambosos October
15th. That's been done 6 months in advance, at least.
Right. That's how Top Rank works. They have Lomachenko waiting there. It's a perfect fight. So Shakur is going to have to wait, or Shakur is going to have to fight a Top Rank 135-pounder. I'm sure they could find someone. Brad Goodman, Bruce Trampler are the matchmakers at Top Rank.
Fantastic
they
guys,
are the best. They literally are the best in the business. But another reason why Shakur missing weight was pretty significant is because of the WBO's clause that we talked about on a previous episode, where if you're the WBO champion and you move up a division, which Shakur Stevenson was planning on doing as the 130-pound WBO champ going to lightweight, you have first crack at the WBO champion, which is Devin Haney. I don't know if that would have like streamlined Haney versus Lomachenko, or excuse me, Haney versus Shakur. But now that he's relinquishing his belt, he doesn't have the chance to do that. So that's interesting. So that's a little wrinkle in him losing, those titles on the scale. But Lomachenko versus Shakur would be fire. Lomachenko versus Haney, obviously, we're getting that. The thing with Gervonta, it's interesting, is everyone's like, you know, he's so powerful. Yes, but he just doesn't throw punches. Like, he throws in the low 30s, like sometimes, teens. Like, it's not going to be like a frantic style fight, but it's just like knowing that Tank has that one hitter quitter that Haney doesn't have. Interesting to me. And I posted a picture on Twitter of the two of them. Shakur is so much bigger than Gervonta Davis, but Davis has no problems knocking out guys bigger. Look what he did, you know, to Mario Barrios and
who's essentially a welterweight. I mean, he went 12 with or 10 or 12 with Keith Thurman. The fight after getting stopped by Gervonta. People need to put that in perspective. Like Mario Barrios got stopped by Gervonta at 140 and then immediately moved up to 147 and went the distance with Keith Thurman. And you really got to take into account that, you know, Gervonta has that kind of power that he's able to put away guys much bigger than him, even though you take a picture next to him, he's way bigger. Shakur's big for all those weight classes, I think. I think both of those guys are different types of guys. But are we going to see that fight right away? Absolutely not.
We're going to see any of these fights? I mean, these guys, as we record this, are just chirping at each other. You know, Ryan Garcia said, Shakur, your fight put me to sleep. The best part of it was the final bell. Devin Haney, you know, is not saying too much to Shakur. It seems like they have a mutual respect towards each other. Keyshawn Davis, who was on the undercard and knocked out another guy, he is getting dragged on Twitter right now because he was too excited that Shakur called out Devin Haney. What are we doing? Why are we upset over a friend being happy for a friend? The reason is Haney tweeted at Keyshawn Davis, we're the same age. And why are you so excited for Shakur when you should be excited for yourself to try to fight me? Do you kind of get that?
No, because he's not there. I mean, we spoke about, I mentioned the top prospects on, you know, the top prospects under 25 who have not won a title yet. And I mentioned that one of my honorable mentions, or no, it was one of my, no, I think it was my honorable mention was Keyshawn right Davis. Outside. Yeah. And the only reason was because he hadn't had enough fights yet. So why could he possibly be calling out the undisputed champion of the world? Even if you're the same age, it doesn't matter. You're starting from different places. And, you know, yeah, sure. You want to jump the gun because, you know, he's obviously fought in the Olympics and he's got a crazy amateur background, but he still has a lot more development to do. He's not there yet. And Devin, be careful, man. He might be there soon. So
I'm into the
a couple of years. He's right there.
6-0
and you'll still be there.
Exactly. 6-0. He looked great.
He did look great.
Way different part of his career. He's coming out of the Olympics. He's still considered like a prospect. Haney is obviously a freaking man. He's at the top of the mountain. It's just like Twitter stuff. I mean, now we have a whole new set of characters at 135 now that are all jockeying, not really fighting each other, outside of Haney fighting Kambosos. Maybe Kambosos, if he looks good enough, has a good enough performance against Shakur, against Haney, he can maybe, if he wants to stick around and fight Shakur at 135, that's another big fight that can be made inside top.
Makes rank. Sense.
Makes sense. I mean, if you're looking for, I have the ring ratings open right now. This isn't the end all be all, but the top 10, there's no one at top rank. You got Kambosos, you got Lomachenko, you got Gervonta, you got Ryan Garcia, Isaac Cruz of PBC, Joseph Diaz is fighting William Zepeda at the end of the month. They're both with Golden Boy. Frank Martin, who I think is really good, he's with PBC. Michael Rivera, PBC. So I'm sure Top Rank will find an opponent for Shakur, expecting to be back first quarter of 2022. Before I move on to the heavyweights, can we get a wellness check on Ronnie? How you feeling?
Starting to sweat, guys.
You're starting good. To sweat. You're starting to sweat like Chris Algieri 1 week out from trying to make 140 pounds.
You want to borrow this? You want to borrow my? Yeah. All right. Sweating's good. Again. You guys sweat it out, bro.
We got your casual corner at the end of the show. So you just have to simply stay alive until the end of the podcast. Can you do that?
All right, I'll try.
Ronnie, get some tea, bro. I got some chamomile here. It's really good for your throat.
Chamomile. Yeah. I might have to try that. Okay.
Chamomile with some lemon.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right, Chris, Ronnie, let's talk about the heavyweight division. This past weekend, the juggernaut, Joe Joyce. Oh, my goodness. What a performance. Averaged 95 punches from round 6 through 11. He came on. It took him a little bit. Started, I wouldn't say slow. The fight was fought at a decent pace. He gets the win, knocks out Joseph Parker. The juggernaut lives on. I love the guy. I know, Chris, you weren't as high on him as I am, but how about this? Threw 844 punches, so that's 84 or something like that around, 80-plus around. Landed 300-plus punches, 100-plus jabs, and 90-plus body shots. That is absurd for a heavyweight He took a lot of punches. He landed a lot of punches. He is probably the most unique heavyweight in boxing right now. This is arguably his biggest win. He is all the rage right now in the heavyweight division. Joe Joyce, I want to see him against the top guys.
Not arguably his biggest win, by far his biggest win. Joseph Parker is a top solid heavyweight contender. Never been stopped. So for to do that, stepping up in experience and caliber and be able to get him out of there the way he did, that's very, very impressive. To throw that many punches, that's absurd. That is absolutely absurd. You know, the thing about Joe Joyce is he's a good athlete. You got a guy like that. He's a big, good athlete. I'm not high in his boxing IQ, obviously, because it's not there yet. It's not there to his physical prowess, but he's making it work. And that's the thing about boxing. That's the thing about boxing that I love. You don't have to do it. It doesn't have to be right. It just has to work. And Joe Joyce is making it work. It doesn't look pretty a lot of the times, but he gets it done, and he got it done on Saturday night against a very, very good fighter. In impressive fashion. So, yeah, I mean, do we want to see him against those top guys? Sure, why not? No. Do I think he can beat those top guys? I don't.
Really? Like, what? No. Like, it's so hard for me to figure out, like, a winner between him and some of these big guys, because every time you go down the list, like, I tweeted, he's a problem. And everyone's like, nah, he can't beat Fury. Nah, he can't beat Wilder. Nah, he can't beat Usyk. But if he could take their best punch, if he can deliver
But that's
power,
a big question. That's a big question. Parker's not a big puncher.
Yeah.
You know, Wilder is. Brian Jennings had him in a world of trouble from a left hook to the liver a couple times.
Yeah, but he didn't show any signs of being hurt, Joyce, in that fight. He hasn't shown any real sign. Besides the Jennings fight, I don't, you know, he has a great chin. I mean, that's probably one of his most... The thing about him that sticks out the most besides the motor is he has an unbelievable chin. So that gives him, if he has a chin, a jab, and power plus power, he could beat anyone.
He could, but there's a question mark with a could, because the chins run out sometimes overnight, and whether you're old or you're not, and he is actually old. But
37. We were calling him 35. He's actually 37.
Right, exactly. So for heavyweights, he's not that old, but for the sport, he's old. And, you know, he hasn't been in that many fights and he hasn't taken that much damage, but he kind of has. He's been hit a lot in his whole career, adding up since that. And that adds up. So I don't know, man. I'd be impressed to see it, but I don't see him as that upper echelon of heavyweight. Even though he has the physicality, he looks the part. But listen, I've been wrong before, I think.
Yeah.
But,
I haven't. I don't know what that's like. I'm a one for my last one in same game parlays.
You've been wrong since Friday.
No,
right?
I haven't been wrong. I put a bunch of money on Aaron Judge hitting a home run. Hopefully that hits and I don't jinx him. I don't mush Aaron Judge. Sitting on 60 home runs. As he did not. We're recording it. I have it on in the background. I think he got out. He grounded out, Ronnie.
Yes, he sharp grounded a third.
All right, he's making contact. At least they're throwing him strikes. They're throwing him. They're not, you know, the Blue Jays. Forget what. It's a whole other. You can find the baseball podcast on the John Boy platform. But back to Joyce. Do you think, obviously, we talked about Wilder. I need to see Deontay Wilder land a flush right hand on Joe Joyce. And I think we all need to see that. It's like a science experiment. Did you see the clip? Someone, a reporter, was like, oh, we need to see you, take a shot from Wilder. And he was like, whoa, 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 wait a second. Like, dude, I don't know if I really want that to happen. Like, that guy can hit. So even he knows the power of Wilder. But I want to see Joe Joyce in there with Fury. I want to see him in there with Usyk. They did fight in the 2013 World Series of Boxing. You know, like you said, Joyce is an older guy. So he wasn't like a teenager. He wasn't, just starting out. And Usyk dominated. That's interesting in terms of how Usyk can move in there, and would be an interesting matchup. There's just so many good matchups with Joyce, but you're saying you wouldn't favor him. Would you favor him over Wilder?
No.
Wow. You think Wilder can stand up to 80 punches a round?
I don't think he needs to. I think he needs to land one. Wow, he lands one right hand. And it seems like Joe Joyce is that hard to find. And no one has stood up to the power of Wilder. I literally think he's the best one punch boxer in history. I mean, the guy could knock out a dinosaur. He lands that right hand. It's the end of the night. Unless you're Tyson Fury and you're literally the, you're rising from the dead.
The Undertaker.
To keep fighting. Yeah, The Undertaker. Exactly. That's what I was thinking of. You know, other than that, I mean, he's starched everybody he's landed that right hand on. So, yeah.
Ronnie, unmute your mic. October 15th, Deontay Wilder at the Barclays Center, Robert Hellenius. I want to go. As a casual fan, what do you know of Wilder? Because I know a lot of casual fans know the name Deontay Wilder.
Yeah, he's one of the few boxers that I know from his name. I don't think I've ever seen him fight. I know that he's been in big fights, but I know his name. That's all I can tell
he
you.
Has
but
got,
the fact that I know his name is great.
He has got some of the most insane highlight reel knockouts, like conjuring up like Mike Tyson, like
one
all-time
punch.
Throwback. One punch. I was at Barclays
from across the ring.
Yeah. Dude, I was at Barclays when he knocked out Brazil, and it was good freaking one. Nuts. Like, we're going to
And Brazil is a good fighter too, and he's
yeah, he starched
Bing.
Him. Bing. Mm-hmm. Bing bong, he was done. We're going to be Bing there, bong. Ronnie, at Barclays October 15th. He fought at Barclays a lot. That was like his home grounds for a while before he moved over to Vegas to fight Fury. It's an experience and a half. You know, his ring entrances, the Barclays crowd is going to be wild. That fight's definitely ending in a knockout one way or another. So he's in the mix too. Obviously, Fury Joshua seems to be off now. The timeline on this fight is bizarre. From Fury calling out Joshua coming off of a loss, Joshua says yes. Fury says, oh shit, he said yes. Now what? Let's give him until Monday. They give him until Monday. Joshua says he signed. He actually freestyled in a car with his boys that he will sign the contract, Joshua. But Fury says he never got the contract. Now Fury is looking to fight Manuel Char. Are you kidding me? After all of that, Tyson Fury's going to fight Manuel Char. Like, this heavyweight division sometimes can be so frustrating. That's all I got.
I think that Tyson is feigning this whole thing. I still think the Joshua fight is going to happen next.
So you've been sticking with that. That's been your stance.
Yeah. Why not? I mean,
but when could though? He, could this he... year or next year?
No, I still think it's going to be next year. I don't think it's going to be right away. The Manuel Char fight, I mean, Tyson's smart. He understands this game. He can throw out that and get people to
fight on
clamor it. About and be like, oh man, Char this, Char that. But it doesn't matter. He's in the news again. He's in the news cycle. Very, very smart. He likes to be in the news cycle. He likes the attention. He called out everybody. He called out Chisora before Usyk and Joshua. And then Joshua fights, and he calls out Usyk. And then now he's fighting Joshua. And now he calls out Emmanuel Char. He understands the game. You know, he's a media mogul at this point. So he understands how this game works. Ultimately, he wants the Joshua fight. That's the payday. That's the fight that he can win. That's the fight that he can look great in. So I ultimately, that's where his target's at.
Yeah, the Fury Joshua fight is the money fight. The Usyk Fury fight is the legacy fight. The Joe Joyce one is, oh, you want me to big balls fight? You want me to stop the
fun
guy?
Fight.
Fun fight, definitely. All of them are fun. That's the beauty of this. Is these are.
I don't think the Usyk fight is fun.
Ronnie has his hand raised.
I have a question. Did you guys
casual
see the video?
From the casual corner?
Yeah.
From the casual bump bit.
This is not my official submission.
Okay. Just warm up.
Once I have the sunglasses on, you'll know it's casual time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you guys see that video of Fury being like, he's got till Monday?
Yeah.
You know, I saw somebody saying that he was obviously on cocaine. What do you guys think about
it? I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to say too, that looked like, we're from Long Island, Chris. We've seen a fair share of people on cocaine. He had the typewriter jaw. Like, I've never seen. Like, that was, like, the most obvious I am.
Like, you've never seen? Like, you've always seen?
Always seen. Like, that guy is clearly on cocaine. Like, he was sweating. His mouth was moving. He was eating an imaginary sandwich.
Eyes.
It wasn't there. Eyes. Like, I mean, and also, he has a history of doing, like, hard drugs.
And he has been retired for 6 months. So, writing's on the wall for that. You know, hey, listen, if it looks like a duck, sounds like a duck, it very well might be a duck.
You do whatever you want. I mean, that's the beauty. I mean, the boxing, these guys have so much free time and all the money in the world and all the adulation.
Hey, but listen, a lot of great fighters in history path have been doing cocaine during their career and performed at a very, very high level because these guys are so talented. Yeah. Listen, it's gonna hurt you in the long run, but
how do you think the 80s existed in boxing?
The 80s was all, yeah, it was coke fueled, all those fights.
What did you say, Ronnie?
Lawrence Taylor.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's 80s were nuts. Tyson Fury is a throwback fighter in more ways than one, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to speculate on his drug use. He got huge at one point, Ron. He won he beat Klitschko in 2015, and then he never made it. He never fought him again. He blew up to almost 450 pounds. He left boxing. He got suicidal, mental health issues, said he was never going to box again, and then he started his comeback. He started losing the weight, got down to where he is now, and has never lost. He only has that one controversial draw. Guy has parties. He parties, he fights. He just comes from a freaking family of gypsies. They're absolutely nuts. There's another Fury fighting this weekend, like another one. There's like 50 of them. If you go to BoxRec, you put in Fury, there's like 55 Furies, and they all come from the same dad, Big John Fury, who once gouged a guy's eye out. He's not allowed in the U.S. Did you know that, Chris?
I did not know that. That's wild. Makes sense.
When Tommy Fury was supposed to fight Jake Paul, it was known that Big John Fury was not allowed to come. So when they did their press conference, he was just like on a, you know, on a TV, and he was yelling out crazy shit to Jake Paul just because, you know, he's not allowed in the U.S. He ripped a guy's eyeball out. Gypsies do. All right, let's move on. It's time for our list. And Chris, our lists have been getting a lot of engagement on social media. We post them every week. We've done some fun ones, the best trilogies of all time. What did we do last week? I forgot already.
Anyone? The top five under 25 who have not won a title.
Of course, the ridiculously long one that was hard to fit on the graphic. But here we go. In light of the Juggernaut, which is a great nickname, in light of our guest this week on the show, the Towering Inferno, Sebastian Fundora, these are the top five best boxing nicknames of all time. And I use best, like you maybe replace best with favorite. I think that's what we went with. But I will start it off. This was hard to whittle down to five. But I'll go with number five, Michael, second to none. Which is just an awesome nickname, considering your last name is Nunn and you want to be the best in boxing. He was damn good. Pride of Davenport, Iowa.
N-U-N-N, by the way, not N-O-N-E. Yes. For those.
Michael Nunn, N-U-N-N. And obviously middleweight champ. I think he was a champion also at 168, I believe, or maybe 154.
Hell of a fighter.
Yeah, two division world champion, really good. Didn't know that he was sentenced to 24 years in prison for cocaine. This is a cocaine podcast now.
Speaking of cocaine.
Yeah, and he was released in 2019. Michael, second to none, is number five on my list. Number four, the Bayonne Bleeder. Chuck Wepner, legend here on the East Coast, legend in New Jersey, especially Bayonne, where he grew up. Legend because the Rocky movie, the Rocky franchise, was based off of this man's life. Chuck Wepner. What a man. The Bayonne Bleeder. That is just the coolest nickname to me, and I'm happy that we'll get to you in a second, Ron. This is my time. We'll get to you, bro. Chuck Wepner, I'm happy that he didn't get any money from the Rocky franchise. They kind of just ripped off his life story and then ran with it. But then Liev Schreiber made that I think that movie on Showtime called Chuck. Obviously not as much money as he would have got from Rocky, but maybe he got a little a check from that. All right, Ron, what do you got?
Oh, no, wait. Rocky was based off this guy?
Loosely. Like he took him to court. I don't think they won, but it's like
allegedly. Yeah. Ronnie. Yeah. Allegedly.
Okay.
A lot of that happens in boxing. A lot of litigation. A lot of hey, you did this to me, and now I'll see you in court. But that was the story. I actually met him at a fight once. He was known that he was like a tough heavyweight that fought. He fought Ali. He almost went the distance with Ali. And then Rocky comes out like right around that time or right after. And it's, I think Sylvester Stallone maybe even admitted to it. I could be wrong here. I'm sure someone will correct me once they listen to this. Number three.
He dropped Ali. He dropped Ali, yes, in that fight.
the same way what's his name dropped Dickie Ward dropped Sugar right. Ray.
Yeah, allegedly. There's a picture of him stepping over him. Yeah. So obviously. Yeah.
So I knocked you down, Ray. Number three, James Lights Out Tony.
Good one.
That is just that should be a nickname right there. That is a nickname. It's Lights Out James Tony. Love that one. 47 knockouts and 77 wins. Hall of Famer. One of the best technicians in there, but we'll turn your lights out in a second. James Lights Out Tony. Number two, are you guys familiar with the work of Eric Eschke?
Butterbean.
Come on, man. What a name. That guy is so good.
Ronnie, you know who that is. He was on Jackass. You know who that is.
You don't
Jackass.
Know who Butterbean is?
Not that I can recall. Maybe if I see a picture, but
Jackass is actually before your time. Shit.
Yeah,
I forgot how young you are.
Butterbean, it was a big fat guy who would
could really punch
rounders. What's up?
He could really punch.
Really, really punch. He fought. I read his bio before we did this. He went into tough man competitions. His friends dared him to. He dominated the tough man competitions, and then they moved him to. He became like a legend. They moved him to like four rounders, and they were putting him on legitimate fight cards. Like he was fighting on pay-per-views underneath like some big time fights.
Yeah, Tyson and, fights and shit. Yeah.
Yeah, Tyson. He would wear the red, white, and blue shorts, and he went by Butterbean. He won 51 consecutive fights, all 4 to 6 rounders. He just was perfect for a pay-per-view. First fight
the
of the night.
Four-rounder.
First fight of the night. Let's get a sick knockout. Get everyone excited. Butterbean, haymaker. It's the best nickname in my. It could be number one because I didn't even know his name was Eric Eschke. You just know him. It's Butterbean. He was in movies. He was in TV. He fought mixed martial arts. He was in Jackass where they set up a ring in like a Modell's and he just like knocks a guy out.
He knocked out Johnny Knoxville bad, like yeah, really bad. That was a bad idea.
That was bad.
Dan, do you remember this? So I don't know if you were a WWE, WWF fan.
Yes.
But they did the boxing and they did a tournament. And
yes.
At the end, the winner fought Butterbean.
Yeah.
And literally, I don't remember, but there was this big tournament and they had these guys fight each other. And it was such a bad idea because every one of them got hurt really bad. They were all great, you know, wrestlers, but there was a couple guys who could actually really punch and yeah. They were knocking everybody out.
Bart
and this
Gunn.
One guy who just, yeah, he was knocking out everybody, could really punch. He was knocking everybody out and he fought Butterbean and Butterbean. Pasted
it. I have it right here.
Bad. Really,
I was watching
really bad.
Something. Some documentary. I really like WWE.
Dark Side of the Ring or something.
Dark
like
Side
that.
Of the Ring, Ronnie. So they yeah. The WWF was like, they needed ideas, and they were like, all right, let's do like real boxing, and
bad
let's
idea.
Have our WWE superstars participate in real fights. They had like a tournament, and then I think the winner went on to fight
Butterbean,
and Bart Gunn made his way. And I remember Bart Gunn saying
he
didn't want to do it, and he didn't like think it was a good idea. He got starched really bad at WrestleMania
bad.
XV 1999. Butterbean, number two. What a legend. He's the man. Number one in my list, Juan, the Hispanic causing panic, Lezcano.
I knew you were going to say this one.
How do you not go number one with that one? Juan, the Hispanic causing panic, Lezcano. Ronnie, our resident Hispanic.
I love it. I mean, the Hispanic causing panic, I've never heard of it, but like, that's amazing.
This guy was actually good.
He was good.
37-5 record. He fought Ricky Hatton, fought for a world title, had some other bangers along his career. He's number one on my list. Honorable mention, Evander Real Deal Holyfield, because
good
that's
one.
Like a term that, like, oh, that's real. Oh, he's real than Real Deal Holyfield. Like, that's one of the best nicknames of all time, but I went a different route here. Michael Nunn, the Bayonne Bleeder, Lights Out Tony, Butterbean, and the Hispanic causing panic. Chris, your list.
This is amazing because none of our nicknames will cross paths. Like,
that's
I have
good.
An entirely different list, which is a very good thing that has not happened yet. Number five, I got Kevin Kelly, the Flushing Flash.
Love him.
Who... one of the first lightweight, like super lightweight guys that actually made prominence in the world scene that people actually tuned in. Mm-hmm. Kevin could really punch. He was super fast. He had that style where he rolled those hands. He fought with his hand down. So that Flushing Flash just made so much sense. Also, I'm from Long Island, New York, and Queens, Flushing, it all made sense. He looks exactly
like Jermell Herring.
I wouldn't say exactly, but
they posted a picture together, like, oh, my long lost twin.
Yeah, I can see it. Jamel's got at least 5 to 10 inches on him in height, yeah. But yeah. Next, another amazing lighter weight fighter, Mark Too Sharp Johnson.
That's a good one.
Who was so good. Listen, viewers, listeners, whatever you're doing, if you don't know who Mark Too Sharp Johnson is, go and Google him. Go watch his fight. I mean, absolutely incredible. Technique, speed, power, knockout punch, toughness, chin, all of it. The guy had everything. And the nickname Too Sharp was perfect because he was just that goddamn good. He was pound for pound on lists for such a long time. Too sharp. Remember that, Dan? Too sharp. He was a pound for pound for a while, like legitimately number one.
Yeah, he was good.
And no one knew who he was. Number three, an all-time favorite of mine, one of the first fighters I ever heard about ever from my grandfather, is Alexis Arguello, El Flaco Explosivo, which is the explosive thin man. I mean, woo, what a name, right? It's a mouthful for sure. It's a long nickname, but it was so indicative of him and his style. He was very, very tall for his weight class. I think he was 5'8", and he was a 126 pounder, super long arms. But I mean, he had knockout power with both hands, was super technical. One of my favorite fighters of all time, technically, to actually watch and study. I mean, Alexis Arguello, absolutely phenomenal champion, inside and outside, and such a cool nickname. Next, Mike, the Body Snatcher McCallum. Dude, that name.
The Body Snatcher. If that doesn't
strike fear in your heart, you got to fight a guy called the Body Snatcher. And it was true.
Yeah.
Jamaican fighter, super tall, super long, super strong, and he was just a killer body puncher. He wanted to rip you up. I got a really good story about Mike.
Go ahead.
So I moved to Las Vegas in 2010 to escape New York. Chris Algieri Escapes New York. I think it was a movie back in the 1990s. So I go to Las Vegas to get real sparring because New York, listen, a lot of great fighters. Very difficult for me to come to Long Island, to Brooklyn, mm-hmm. to spar 3 times a week. It just wasn't really plausible. So I said, hell, I'll just move and just live where I can actually walk to gyms and do whatever. So I went to Las Vegas and I bounced around every single gym trying to get sparring. And I went to Johnny Toko's, and very, very famous gym in Las Vegas. And I go in the gym. My trainer and I walk in there and we're like, oh, we're here for sparring. They think my trainer wants to spar because my trainer was actually in really good shape at the time. The late, great Tim Lane. Rest in peace, Tim.
Yep.
So we're in the gym. He's in great shape. They're like, "Yeah, you want sparring? How much do you weigh?" And my trainer's like, no, not for me. It's for my fighter. Where's your fighter? I'm in the corner. I'm well known for wearing long tights and spandex, and I've been doing this since the 2000s. And they go, "That guy? The guy put on the tights?" And my trainer goes, "Yeah. We got sparring for him. Come in the back." Okay, go in the back. Take me around the corner. Anyone who knows the layout of Johnny Toko's know exactly what I'm talking about. Take me into the back ring, which is the smallest ring they have there.
Ooh.
And obviously I'm tall, long, I'm a boxer, whatever. They throw me in with an undefeated Mexican fighter and we go at it. I mean, balls to the wall. We're just really, really going for it. I get the better of the guy, especially towards the later rounds. And I'm a good potty puncher. I always have been, even for a tall, long guy. So I get out of the ring. I'm taking off all my gear. And is this hulking man is walking towards me. And I look at him and I look down, I look up, and I look down, I look up, and I go, it looks like Mike McCallum. Oh, and he comes up and he goes, "Hey, you're a good boxer." And I go, I'm like stuttering. And I'm like, I can't say his name. And I go, "The Body Snatcher." And he goes, "Hey, you know who he goes, you know who I am?" And I go, "Yes, of course. You're Mike McCallum. You're a Hall of Famer. You're a multiple division world champion." I go, "You're a bad man." And I shake his hand, which is his hand is
it's like a mitt.
Literally his finger was in the middle of my forearm. And I go, you're a bad man. He goes, "Ah, I used to be a bad man." He goes, "You're a bad man now." Cause he saw me spar.
That is amazing. And
I was like, okay, that's the best thing that's ever going to happen to me in boxing.
And your first day in sparring?
First day sparring in Las Vegas at Johnny Tocco's, yeah.
The body snatcher. And he is known as, like, that's right. He is known as, like, the body guy, even to this day. Like, oh. I know Devin Haney is a fighter that will go find other trainers, will go out and seek opinions and go to different gyms. And he was working with Mike McCallum because he is known as the best body puncher. I mean, it's the body snatcher, for goodness sakes. That is an amazing story, man. That is so cool. I mean, I just felt like I was walking through it with you. That's sick.
And that's still my number two. My number one, Roberto Duran, the hands of stone. Because is there anything, if you ever watched Roberto Duran in any of his fights, what else are you thinking about except for those thudding shots? Everything he did, because he's such a good inside fighter. So if you're thinking about a guy whose hands are hard, and even on the inside, he's covering up, bang, he's hitting you with these little shots, and they're jarring guys all the way to their shoes. You see him hit a guy on the inside, and then they're wobbling. He was the hands of stone. So Manos de Piedra, Roberto Duran, best nickname of all time.
I mean, yeah, Roberto Duran is such a legend. And when he shows up at fights still, there's like a whole different pop for him, a whole different air about him. I saw him at Fury Wilder too. And a lot of fighters show up to these fights, big fight. And you go, oh, wow, that's, you know, so-and-so, that's Evander Holyfield, that's Mike Tyson, that's Lennox Lewis, that's Roy Jones, that's blah, blah, blah. There's like an air around Roberto Duran. Legend.
He's a king.
Yeah, he is a king. Hands of stone. Like, they don't make nicknames like this anymore. All these,
he's got a finger like mine, by the way. Have you seen his finger? He's got one like mine.
No, I haven't.
Look it up. Roberto Duran has a finger like mine. He holds it up and it's like it's always sticking out.
Your pinky's on Twitter again. I posted it.
Yeah, it's the trick of pinky's been around for a while.
But you notice that all these nicknames are all old. I mean, not old, but like, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s. There aren't that many good nicknames anymore. It's a problem.
I think, I don't know. I was thinking about that too. I think there are, we just don't really think about them. Like, honestly, like even like Devin Haney, the Dream. I love that.
That's pretty good. Gypsy King, Tyson Fury.
Gypsy King is great.
What'd you say?
Takeover.
Tank.
Yeah. Tank is good.
Is a good one, but Tank is like, that's like his childhood name, you know, like that's what he is. But yeah, no, you're right. That's a good name.
Fighting Collegian.
Yeah. Bam. I mean, that's not really a great one, but.
Yeah, but Michael Buffer, Bam Rodriguez. But Michael Buffer gave you the Fighting Collegian, right?
Which makes it a good one. Otherwise, it wouldn't be that good. But yes, it's a great one now.
That's our list. We'll post it on Twitter and get some interaction. So the boxing hipsters, there's so many of them. You could be like, how did you leave off, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. You know, the guys that fought on freaking Friday Night Fights in like 1994.
Angel Man Freddy, like he was El Diablo. That was a good one.
Yeah.
I had two honorable mentions that I wrote down. Donovan Razor Ruddock, who I watched his first fight with Mike Tyson tonight, right before this cast. I thought that was really cool, especially the way he fought. He was super sharp for a big, strong, athletic guy. I really liked the way he fought. And then Ike Bazooka Quartet, who had one of the best jabs that you will. Young fighters at home, go watch Ike Quartet. Watch the way he threw a jab. It was like a right hand. Technically perfect. He turned it over. It was hard. It was accurate. He was very busy with it. I'm sure Copybox Dan can agree with me on that. Iquarte Bazooka was a phenomenal, phenomenal welterweight in the 90s.
Turo Thunder Gotti, James Bone, great name. Crusher Smith, Oliver the Atomic Bull, McCall, Motor City Cobra, Thomas the Hitman Hearns.
Dude, he was so close to being on my list because he had two of them. He had the Motor City Cobra and his Hitman.
Motor City Cobra is such a badass name.
That's a badass name.
And the Hitman.
Oh, I forgot.
How do you have two great nicknames? These guys.
Two great nicknames. I forgot my man Clarence Bones Adams. That's Bones. Bones with a Z.
Ray Boom Boom Mancini, Andrew Sixhead Lewis, Sweet Pea Whitaker, DeVarrell Touch of Sleep Williams.
That's a good one. Williamson. That's a good one.
The Body Snatcher, of course, we went through the Merciless Ray Mercer. There's so many good ones. Owen, What the Heck, Beck, the Tasmanian Devil. There's so many.
Didn't Muhammad Ali give him coin the term the GOAT?
The greatest.
The greatest.
The greatest. Okay.
Which is, that's so perfect for him. The greatest. Yeah. He's the greatest. Yeah.
The GOAT. And then the GOAT came from him, the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Legend. What, Ronnie, what would your nickname be?
Well, my nickname being a boxing match?
Put you on the spot right here.
Slick.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Ronnie.
That's good.
Slick. Jerez.
It was first, yeah.
Jerez. Diamante Jerez. All right.
Yeah. That's funny. That was almost my nickname growing up when I was a kid, was Slick.
Slick? It's a good one.
I refused to take it.
It's like what every grandpa or any older guy, and like, hey, Slick, how you doing, Slick? I can see you as a
Slick skinny person. Guy.
I can see you as a Slick. All right, let's get to our guest this week. He is Sebastian Fundora. He's got a fight October 8th on Showtime against Carlos Ocampo. Really enjoyed this interview with Sebastian. He's a soft-spoken guy. He is very feared inside that ring. He is more than just a freak athlete or a freak to look at 6'7". 254 pounds. He actually can fight. I think you'll enjoy this interview. Here it is. All right, everybody. Sebastian Fundora is here. He is a 154-pound stud on the doorstep of a world title. First of all, Sebastian, thank you so much for taking time to join us here at John Boy Media Boxing. How are you?
Great. Thank you guys for having me. I'm very excited to be on it.
Let's talk about your fight. Big fight, October 8th on regular Showtime. Love that. A lot of pay-per-views out there, and fans will be able to watch you on regular Showtime. Carlos Ocampo, very good fighter. Obviously, a lot of fans would know him for his fight with Errol Spence, but since that fight, he has reeled off consecutive wins. He hasn't lost since that fight. Big stay busy fight for you, but also a dangerous one as well.
Yes. I think those are fights that help us grow, you know. It's good to have another ranked fighter
resume.
Yeah, in a resume. There you go. So we've been fighting hard fights these past couple of fights, these past like five fights. It's all been tough fights. So this is no different. We just want to keep the same schedule and continue on.
You say it's like a good learning fight. Do you, someone that's like knocking on the door of being a world champion, you're young, but you're definitely experienced. Do you still, like, is there still things to learn in there?
Oh yeah. Every day with every fight, you know, I feel like fighting this competition is going to help me grow, because when I am champion, I'm going to have to be fighting this competition constantly. So that's, it's just helping me get used to it beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Have you rewatched the Lubin fight?
Of course, multiple times.
What did you make of it? I have watched a lot of fights. That was one of the most savage fights I've ever seen. You know, it's on a list of top five for me, where I'm like, I walk away from it and I say, wow, this is what I do for a living. I've watched these men go to war and just, you know, just take everything, so much punishment. What did you, the first time you rewatched it, what was your initial reaction? Because that was a tough fight.
It was a good fight. And it's exactly how I remember, you know. I felt like every round I was watching myself fight. So while I was in the fight myself.
Was that, you were hit the deck. That was a testy moment for you. I read a quote from you saying that you took a knee because you just wanted to regroup yourself. You wanted to take that time. I'm not sure. Was that the first time you've been dropped in a fight?
Yes. That's right, so first time that. ever in sparring and everything. All that. Oh, that's God. The first time. But I took the knee. It's not like I haven't been cracked before. It's just in the fight, it's different because any second they could stop the fight. So with that, I was like, you know what? I don't want to get hit with another punch like that. So I'm going to take a little breath. Got to like 5 seconds, and I was like, you know what? Okay, back to normal. Let's get back to work.
I feel like you and Lubin are going to be, you know, remembered together for a long time. I mean, when you have a fight like that, that's that memorable. Many people have it as their fight of the year this year. Do you feel like you have a connection to him? Have you spoken to him at all, Erickson Lubin?
I saw him the day after. So on the day after, give a hug, gave each other hugs. We knew each other in amateurs. We're both born in Florida, so it was just the like we were friends beforehand. We were friends after. It's just it's business, you know. It's boxing. Everybody wants to become a world champion, and that's the cost of it.
Yeah, you want to be a world champion. One last thing: you were on the. There was a picture of you on the phone after the fight. I actually tweeted it out. Who were you talking to?
I was talking to Mauricio.
Mauricio Suleiman.
Yeah, I was talking to him. He called me. He congratulated me right away. He invited me to Martes de Café, the Tuesday coffee thing they have in Mexico City. Mm-hmm. And He invited me to that. I told him my sister was fighting a couple of weeks later in Mexico City. So he said that was perfect time to go and receive. They were going to give me my intern belt and the little bracelet I have.
Oh, there you go.
They gave me the bracelet as well. So
does that fit around your wrist?
It does. Well, my wrists aren't too big.
I was going to say, you're pretty skinny. Yeah.
So, yeah.
You're a slim guy.
Yeah.
That's funny. A lot of people thought it was Al Heyman.
No, it wasn't Al Heyman. No, sometimes I don't even think he's real. So he's a very secluded man. So, but I'm sure he's there. It's just he's behind the scenes.
He's definitely watching. I know. I met him once at a Mayweather after Mayweather Cotto, 2012. I was in Mayweather's locker room. This is before PBC was even a thing. This is 3 years before the PBC was even formed. And I was like, damn, who is that guy? He seems very important. There's a lot of people huddled around him. Oh, someone's like, oh, that's Al Heyman. You know, he manages Floyd. That was his only fight. I think he had Vernon Forrest before that. But I know he watches everything. I know he has a big stake in everything. I know that he has a very big stake in you because you're very popular. You know, I think it started off as you had like a cult following because of your height. And everyone was like, damn, this dude is 6'6" and he's 154 pounds. But I think it's gone from like, oh, wow, that's like a novelty to this guy is really, really good. And he is so tough and he's going to be a world champion soon. Do you feel that shift too from fans being like, you know, more questions about your actual ability rather than, wow, he is so damn tall?
Yeah, definitely after the last fight, I got a lot more respect. But I still feel like I still have to prove myself. I'm going to have to be proving myself, I feel like, my whole career. You know,
why is that?
I don't know. I feel like people just think like I just came out of nowhere and like a Jake Paul and I'm not real YouTube. I'm not a real boxer. You know, I'm one of those YouTubers, especially because of my height. You know, it's not fair or whatever. But I've been in this sport my whole life. You know, I was recently watching some of my fights when I was little.
Wow.
I've been competing since I was 8 years old. I've been around the sport since I was like six. So it's been my whole life this whole time.
Do you think it's because you're so like mild mannered? You know, I think that's part of your charm. But do you think that's the reason why is too as well? Because you're not like, you know, calling people out. You're not talking trash. You're not showing up with, you know, jewelry and doing interviews with sunglasses on. You're coming up and I'm like, dude, that guy could be like the IT guy at my office. But he'll knock you out. Do you think that's a reason why maybe people like, oh, wait, where did he come from?
Yeah, I think so. It's like looks are deceiving, you know. You see this guy with like the last press conference where I wore a collared shirt and khaki pants, and people, that's how we dress. I want to look sharp, you know. I still look like a substitute teacher that someone said. So, but
I think it might have been me that tweeted that. I'm sorry, bro.
Yeah, someone else, one of you guys, and but I want to bring this sport back into like a gentleman's sport. You know, we want to look sharp. We want to look presentable. We don't have to be wearing the latest clothes that cost like $5,000. I don't need to be wearing Yeezys to look like a badass. You know? We want to be sharp. We want to be the someone you can look up to.
I agree. There's room for all of that in the sport. There's room for those that want to wear Yeezys. There's
of course, room for of the guys. I'm exactly, not knocking right? them down. They're cool. They look cool. Exactly. But there's other routes too.
I agree with that. There's room for a little bit of everything in this sport. That's why it makes it so beautiful. And I think fans are definitely starting to take notice. When you go to fights, do you feel like you're getting people starting to ask for more selfies with you?
Oh, definitely. After that fight, it seems like everywhere I go, especially with boxing events, I get bombarded with fans. And I don't have a problem with that. I'll take a picture with all of them. You know, it's not a problem with me.
That's so cool. That's probably one of the more rewarding things. Like you put in so much hard work. You got a damn gym in your backyard, which we'll get to. And, you know, you sacrifice so much. So you could go out into a setting and people want to be like, oh, I want to take a picture with you. I want an autograph. I want to just talk to you. That, you know, that's got to feel rewarding after, you know, it's definitely. Just like some reinforcement, right?
Definitely. I'm proud of that. So whatever chance I can take, because, you know, maybe this ends tomorrow. I'm just going to embrace it all while I can.
That's the crazy thing about boxing. where, you know, it's different than any other sport. Like NBA, you have a bad game, you come back the next night, or you're signed to a five-year deal or whatever. Boxing, I mean, one night, I mean, who knows if Erickson Lubin will ever get back to that level or ever be the same. Who knows? Like, that's the one thing about boxing. I always say, if you don't play boxing, your whole career can change in one night.
Your whole career, your whole life can change in one night. So it's a scary sport, but we all love it. We're all crazy for it.
Yeah, I love the damn sport. I mean, this is what I do for a living. I love talking about it. I love watching guys like you fight who lay it all on the line. Let's talk about how you want to become a world champion. I mean, that's the one thing I know that's your singular focus. Jermell Charlo is the champion at the weight class that you were in at 154. He's fighting Tim Zhu, but the caveat is that they're fighting in January of 2023, which is very interesting because that's a long ways away. So you figure that these guys fight twice a year now. So if you add 6 or 7 months onto January, if my math is correct, that's sometime in the summer. I know that you won the fight with Lubin, makes you, you know, a mandatory for Charlo. That's a long time between now and next summer. I know you want to stay active. Have you, you know, mapped that out? I'm sure you have, about getting that title shot, and what's the time in between going to look like?
Well, if we don't get that fight after Sue, we'll just continue busy. This is a tough fight, but we want to stay busy. So we're going to just keep fighting these guys, those top 10 guys. If we can get any of those top 10 guys, we'll just keep fighting them until we get the title shot ourselves.
Do you think that, would you take a risk? Would you take a risk of, you know, something similar to what Joe Joyce is doing this weekend, where, you know, he has a really good spot in the WBO. Like, he doesn't have to fight
Parker.
He doesn't have to fight Parker. He can probably sit back and wait to see how it plays out with the top guys in that title. But if something comes along where it's a risky fight, just so you can continue to make that climb and continue to learn, like you talked about, would you take that?
Of course. I'm here to fight. You know, we fight to get paid. So if I'm not fighting, I'm not going to get paid too. So that's the business side of boxing.
Yeah.
But I want to stay busy. That's our style, to stay busy. It feels up to me. I wish I could have fought 3 times this year, but as these fights get harder, I guess I do need a little bit more break, but I'm still going to continue and fight these hard fights.
Yeah, I would think some time off after the Lubin fight would be wise. That was in April, May, June, July, August, September. We got a nice solid 6 months. That's good. You know, like, there's like a Brian Castaño. I'm looking at the ring ratings right now. Tim Zhu
is number two, I think, right?
Yeah, he's in the top three with you. Tony Harrison has a win. Yes. Liam Smith's been looking good. Danny Garcia is at 154. I mean, these are all fights that, like, they would obviously – they wouldn't really help your spot in terms of getting that next shot at Jermell Charlo, but there are big fights that you, like you said, can get paid. So would you take a fight with like Castaño or Harrison or Danny Garcia?
Of course. Those are the next best things.
Yeah.
So if I can't have that fight next with Charlo after Tim Tzu, then the Castaño, the Garcia, the Harrison, those are the big fights that would have to make.
Do you think they would want to fight you, though? That's the thing.
Not them. You know, I can't speak for them, but I would hope so.
I try to get you to say something there. You're too much of a nice guy. You're not gonna do that. Would you consider going up in weight if you're like, realize that, you know, maybe Jermell Charlo fights in January, then who knows what he does after that? He's talked about, you know, maybe going up. You know, there's talks about some of the guys at 47 moving up. Have you considered maybe 160, consider that 160 right now is a barren wasteland?
As of right now, I'm not really thinking of moving up to 160. I want to at least win one title at 54. You know, I've been campaigning there my whole career, so I would definitely like to get a title in that weight class, but maybe after.
Do you think you are the most feared boxer in the game?
I don't think so. I still think people think, I'm pretty like, I feel like I have a target on my back. I think everybody still thinks they could beat me. Bring it on. I want that. You know, I have the little chip on my shoulder, but I feel like I always have to prove myself too. Bring it on, you know?
Love that.
The more merrier.
Let's get to some fan questions. I tweeted out that you were joining the show and I got flooded with some good ones. Quesa de la Monte wants to know, how high of a weight class do you think you'd get by the end of your career? You're so young, it wouldn't be crazy. You could fill out every division from 154 to heavyweight.
Who knows? Who knows? Right now, I'm still comfortable at this weight. I still walk around this weight. But, you know, maybe next year, before I even get that title shot, who knows? Maybe I'll be fighting at 168. You know, with our body, everybody knows that we can fill up to that. So who even knows?
Imagine Sebastian Fundora, the heavyweight. I mean, it's not that crazy to think of.
Yeah, you know, it's not even that crazy. So I can't imagine it. It's just I might have to take a lot of protein.
What's your daily intake? I think I've asked you this before. What's your daily intake? Like, I think I've interviewed you once before, and you said you kind of walk around like around 150 to 154. Is that still the case?
Yeah, probably now. 160 now, a little bit heavier, but it's nothing crazy. Yeah.
Do you think you could ever put on like to get to heavyweight? I mean, this is such a crazy thing that you think of, but like, could you think you could put that on? But that's like something you have. Every fighter has a dream. Would you ever dream of one day being a heavyweight?
I would love to. I would love to. Those guys get all the attention right there. So, you know, that would be great. And I have the height to do it. I have the reach to do it. You know, hopefully with that extra weight, I could get that power too. But I watched those guys like Deontay Wilder. And I was like, if I had a punch like that. So maybe if I put on the extra pounds, you know, that'd be great.
Yeah, you could.
I think
really...
I have to cut out running though. To cut out running because I'm constantly sweating, you know. That will probably keep the weight on without the running, or I don't know how I would have to train because I sweat it out like crazy, especially this summer. I swear, like after each session, I would lose like 5-6 pounds.
Oh, maybe you got to move out of the Coachella Valley, man.
Maybe I have to. Maybe go do a camp in Alaska.
Okay. Do a camp in Alaska with nothing but cheeseburgers.
Yeah,
you
there
come
you go.
Out of there and you are 215 pounds. And you're challenging, who's the young guy at top rank? Jared Anderson in 5 years.
Yeah, there you go.
Jared Anderson, Sebastian Fundora, heavyweight title. It's the new Fury Wilder. I mean, boom, let's go.
There you go, right?
I'm going to rewind this interview in 5 years, and I'm going to be like Nostradamus. I'm going to be predicting the future. That's wild to think, because Roy Jones, I think, is the only fighter to win a title at middleweight to heavyweight. You can beat Roy Jones if you go 154, 160.
One more weight class, no?
Yeah, you could potentially do that. I mean, the sky's the limit for a fighter like you with those dimensions. Let's move on to our next question. I don't have the name here, but who did you watch growing up and who did you tailor your style after?
We watched a lot of heavy hitters. I like Marquez. I remember watching Marquez, especially with those Pacquiao fights. Those were good fights. Oscar De La Hoya, I remember seeing his last fight. That's the last time that's the last time for everybody to see that, seen him when he fought Pacquiao. A lot of Pacquiao, a lot of Mayweather. You know, we always idolized Mayweather. I remember growing up, everybody was like, Mayweather's a runner. I'm like, Mayweather, he beat your guy. He beat all your guys. So yeah. So that was pretty good. Canelo too, but Canelo was like already, you know. I feel like I was already turning pro at that time, or I was already competing more at the elite level when Canelo was already becoming that pound for pound king.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like growing up, we watched. I remember watching all the like the icons, like the Mayweathers and the Pacquiao's and stuff like that. I don't really remember more of the. I remember watching like Cotto and all that stuff like that, but I feel like more. I watch a lot more boxing now, like. I have to, of course. It's part of my job. It's part of the homework. But more of like the, not the lower levels, but like say the B, C fighters and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that you didn't mention anyone with like the same dimensions as yourself. Like,
the heavyweights.
Yeah, really, I mean, that's really like, it. I mean,
The only one I only admire him because of his power. I mean, I think that's why everybody does Deontay Wilder. His power is like explosive. Explosive.
Yeah,
that's that right hand. I just wish I had a hand like that.
What are you saying? Like you have.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it. One day, you guys will just see me box from the outside and knock people out with my left hand. But until then, I'm maybe the inside game's for me right now.
What do you mean? Like you have power? Like you're saying you don't have power? I've seen you drop guys.
I'm talking about like that.
Oh, that type power. Of power. Like, I feel like you're almost born with
power.
It.
Like Gennady power, like
yeah,
not past week in Gennady, but you know what I mean, like that destructive power, better Reeve, like that power. I want that power, but that's something you have to work for. But I think I can get it.
You said you like you maybe you can stay on the outside, but you, I mean on the inside. That's an interesting route you take, because obviously you have a reach advantage, a significant reach advantage over every opponent you have. And I told you that we do the CompuBox. Like, you do throw a jab, but you don't really land it consistently. You like trading on the inside. That kind of goes against everything that if you just looked at your height and reach, right? Why is that?
Just something I'm comfortable with. I'm very comfortable with fighting the inside. So mm-hmm. I had to get used to it. A lot of these guys like to fight on the inside, especially with a taller opponent. And instead of running away from it, I invited it and learned how to fight the inside.
Like that. 2021 Chacon wants to know, my question for Sebastian is, does he see himself fighting any of the PBC 147-pounders who will eventually move up to 154? Errol Spence comes to mind.
Of course. When they move up, I'll definitely introduce them to the weight class. I have no problem with that. You know, those are tough fights. I'm willing to learn from those fights. And again, introduce them to it, because those are big names as well. And let's make some money.
Yeah, seriously. If you are, you're in a good spot, because if you can make the weight comfortably, like as you said, you can. Guys like Errol Spence have talked about going to 154. Guys like Terrence Crawford going up to 154. Whoever wins that fight, I feel like after that fight is over, if it happens, I've been told it's going to happen, they're going to move to 154. And if you're going to wait for Charlo to figure out what's going on with Zoo, you can win a title. And then all of a sudden you're fighting, you know, an Errol Spence or Terrence Crawford. If they want to win a title there, that's a really good spot for you. No,
definitely. Those are pound for pound fighters right there. So, I can get a win on one of those guys, put me on the list.
All right, Mr. Ed wants to know, who gave you the name Towering Inferno?
My promoter, Samson. They told me it's a movie, Towering Inferno. It's an old movie from the 70s. They always suggest it to me. They always tell me it's a good movie.
Yeah.
I'm not going to watch it. I always tell them that I'll watch it, but I'm not going to watch it. I don't really have no interest in that, something like that.
It's a good name, though. That's a really good name.
It is a very good name. It's a very good name. At first, I didn't really like it either. But I feel like it was more mocking me. But I get older and you start to realize things a little bit more. Like, yeah, I guess it makes sense for my style.
Yeah.
Inside game, a lot of punches, the fire that makes. And then obviously the height with the towering. So.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. It's like when I showed some pictures of the kids at the office where I work, they're like, oh, who are you interviewing? And I showed Sebastian Fundora, and they're like, oh my God, look at the pictures look fake when you're fighting these smaller opponents. But yeah. I wouldn't say it's not mocking you. It's like, hey, listen, if you're going to garner attention, it's hard to garner attention in the sport of boxing. I mean, it's not a league. You have to promote yourself. So if people are going to be like, oh, I want to tune in to see, you know, it's very, you know, it's unusual having a guy 6'7" who can fight at 154. I mean, I take it, right? I take any eyeballs you can get on you. But once they watch, they can say, oh, damn, this guy can fight. So it's like, I think it works in your favor.
And then, as I get older, I start to realize these things and the business part of boxing, well, you have to sell yourself.
Yeah.
Those stuff start to make more sense to me. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe this wasn't a bad thing after all. It's not negative. It's a positive thing.
Yeah. How old are you now?
24.
Damn, man. We're putting together Chris Algieri, my new co-host for the podcast. And he's great. And we're putting together a top 5 under 25, and I was convinced that you were over 25 years old. So you might be on my list now. I mean, it's you, guys like Boots. Yeah, you're right on the cusp. You, Boots Ennis, Shakur Stevenson, Jared Anderson, probably. I think Teofimo's 25 now, so he won't be able to make the list. But damn, I didn't realize that you were under 25. That's wild, because you have a lot of fights and you've made a lot of ground in those years. Renee Young Box wants to know, you seem like a very level-headed person. Who raised you with such well-mannered fashion of carrying yourself?
My mother and my father, of course. They always showed me to respect people and with discipline and all that stuff. And it's just how I was raised. You know, all my siblings are the same way. You know, we show respect to everybody.
Yeah. And you have a big family. I know your sister now will be fighting on October 8th as well. Yes. That's amazing. I know you have a big family, right?
Yes, big family. Six in total, there's six kids.
Wow. How many of them fight besides you and Gabriella?
Well, my older brother fought, and then my younger brother fought. He's in my younger brother's in the military now, so that's why he got out of boxing.
Wow.
And then my older brother became 12-0 in professionals, but he felt like he was moving too slow, so he wanted to try something else, you know.
Wow. And your sister, how proud of you of your sister? I think it's awesome that she's now getting more recognition fighting on your cards. That's got to be something for the family, your parents, to come to the arena and see you and you know, their son and their daughter fight on the same card.
I'm very excited that now they're a platform like Showtime is going to showcase her talent. Hopefully next time she gets the TV, but you know, I'm just happy. I'm proud that she gets that position now, you know?
Yeah, it's great. Women's boxing is on the rise. I mean,
yes, it is.
15th, we're going to see an amazing doubleheader with Mikaela Mayer, Bumgarner, Shields, Savannah Marshall. We saw Katie Taylor and Serrano did this year. It's like, what, if you're a boxing promoter and you have to, it's not like a choice anymore. Like, there should be at least two women's fights on every fight card.
Yeah, yeah. I don't see why not. They're exciting. And they're the best. They're fighting the best. So why not?
100%, man. 100% agree. Can you quickly tell us about the – I love the backyard setup that you have. Your dad built a ring in the backyard for you so you can spar, easy sparring, don't got to drive to the gym. And then on top of it, he took it to the next level. There's housing for sparring partners. Can you please explain this setup?
Well, I think we were just talking about that earlier too. When my parents bought the house, they saw the big backyard. So they already had the idea of putting the ring in the backyard. So we were training in a local gym right here in Coachella. And we're like, you know what? We don't really want to deal with anybody no more. We just want to do our own thing. So that's what we did. We got the ring. We put the ring there. We set up some bags. We have like 6-7 bags out there too. We have all our stuff. We have like our sled. We even have a rope. We climb up the rope. We do stuff like that. We have the whole gym set up. And then we built a casita. Two bedroom house has a kitchen, has bathroom, has everything. And it was built by all of us, the family and a couple other boxers. So
wow,
you asked me to build you a house, I can build you a house.
That is the coolest thing I've heard in a long time. So not only your parents have the foresight to let's build a gym in the backyard, it could cover so many of the costs of working out at a gym. We'll take it to the next level and build a house for the sparring partners. So you beat them up all day and then you put them in a nice house.
Yep. You see it all the time. And a lot of them come and go. So you see their face that they come in all happy, like, oh, it's going to be a great time. And then after sparring, they're like, hey, come eat dinner with us. And like, no, I'm just
going to
stay.
Well, we're good. I'm going. I'm going to go back to the sparring house and lick my wounds after getting beat up by Sebastian Fundora. Unbelievable. Last fan question. I think you'll enjoy this one. Nadim Hamed, who is a legendary Twitter account. Have you ever done a backflip? And if so, did you kick an airplane?
No, I can't do a backflip. I don't think I'm too tall. I seen Joe Joyce. He did some like little cartwheel thing. And I've seen Joe Joyce in Big Bear. He's a big guy, way, way bigger than me. Yeah. And maybe one day. I had a dream that I did a backflip and I fell on my face. I was like, maybe not. But
we don't want you getting hurt before your world title. No, shot.
I don't want to get myself hurt. Not in front of the camera. I've been mentioning to Showtime that we've been doing karaoke with the family.
Oh my God.
So now they're like, messing with me like hey, we're just gonna throw the mic at you, you're gonna start singing after your fight. I'm like, don't do that.
Well, Tyson,
man. You
guys Fury does it.
I know Tyson Fury, but he probably practices that. We don't practice. I know for a fact my voice is bad, so
well,
you know, don't put me in a situation. You want to see Sebastian Fundora in an awkward situation? I mean, be my guest, but I don't think you really want to do that.
Well, I feel like karaoke is practice, so maybe you can like sing yourself into the ring.
Maybe instead of bringing out like a rapper or a singer, I'll start singing for my. I'll be the first, definitely.
Well, if that's the case, if your family's doing karaoke and you have this house with the ring, sparring partners, we have to get you a title shot so we can get all access. Showtime All Access would be lit at the Fundora house.
Yeah, party after the fight. The after party's at my house.
That's amazing. Sebastian Fundora, you're the best. Keep up the great work. October 8th. One of the best, better months in boxing is coming up, and you'll be fighting Carlos Ocampo on Showtime. Hope you get that title shot soon. You remain a cult favorite in the Twitter world. So I appreciate the time. Thank you for a great interview.
Thank you for having me.
Special thanks to our boy, Sebastian Fundora. Check him out. October 8th on Showtime. There's no big fights this weekend. It's very rare that happens. I think there. I gotta check the schedule. There. I think John Gotti, the third. John Gotti III is fighting on a star
in my hometown.
Yeah, I actually called all 12 of his MMA fights, amateur MMA fights. He fought for my brother's promotion. Great kid, really hard worker.
Yep.
He's not just like some novelty. Oh, it's John Gotti's grandson. He was good MMA fighter. I don't know what he can do with boxing. So he's fighting this weekend over on Star Boxing. You can go check that out.
He trains with two of my really good friends, Derek Panza over at Derek Panza MMA on Long Island, and also strength coach Dr. Michael Camp, who was my strength coach for many, many years and a very good friend of mine. So I've known Derek since I was literally a child, his coach, Derek Panza. Gotti can fight, man. He's not just a name. He can actually fight.
I'm interested to see how he looks in the ring. He got heavy hands. I've seen him knock out a lot of guys with the smaller gloves. And I think Jarrell Miller is in action this weekend.
Finally.
Are you still tight with him?
Yeah, big baby. That's my buddy. Dude, I've known him since my kickboxing days. We're literally going back 20 years. Literally 20 years I've known Jarrell.
He's fun. He's back in action this weekend too, but there are none of the main networks are putting on boxing. So if you have a significant other, you want to go do something this weekend and there's no boxing. So enjoy that, because the next few weeks are going to be absolutely wild. All right, Ronnie. Well,
the love of my life is boxing. So I'm just going to stare at the wall for the rest of the weekend.
Okay. I thought you said the love of your life. You're like, your girlfriend's a boxer. No, the love of your life is boxing.
You're
married to the game.
Yes.
I mean, do you see the background? Like, this is where I'm going to hang out all weekend. Just stare.
I'm heading upstate to a wedding, so I don't have to miss out on any boxing or be watching on my phone like I was this past weekend with my girlfriend. I'm watching Joyce Parker on my phone, watching Serrano, parlays.
The girlfriends, they love that. They love when you do that.
Love when you watch sports on your phone when you're at the dinner.
While you're doing things with them? Yeah.
When you're at the dinner with their friends. Oh, he doesn't usually do this. He doesn't usually do this. I'm like, oh, I need this parlay. Anyway. All right, let's get to the casual corner, how we end every show here. Ronnie Jerez, our local casual. Hold on, let me get my sunglasses. Hold on, 1 second.
Let's get casual, guys.
For you guys at home who don't understand, every time we do casual corner, the shades go on. These are the hater blockers. So
it's time to get casual. It's time for Ronnie's casual corner, where he introduces one casual topic and we discuss it.
I'll make this quick before I lose any more brain cells from this fever. So this man, Shakur Stevenson, didn't make weight and relinquished, was it one or two titles?
Two.
Is this a common thing? Because Dan, when you told me this in the office, I was like, this should be like devastating for him. Is there any strategic value to this? Is this common? What does this mean? Like, go into depth.
Yeah, it's not too common. David Benavidez, a guy recently that has done this, he's a 168. Usually bigger guys that can't make the weight anymore. And when you say like 1.6 pounds, like to the layman out there, that's not too bad, but you have to
the
like
casual, not the layman, the casual,
right? The casual. That's not a lot of weight. It's a tremendous amount. Most guys are 0.4 over. Chris, you could speak better to this. Most guys are 0.4 over and they have an hour to come back and try to make the weight. But I wouldn't say it happens too often, especially a guy that's like considered elite. Like Shakur Stevenson, Chris, you know all about making weight. You know, you stepped on that scale before. It's not too common, but maybe you could speak on how crazy it is to maybe have to make the weight. If you kept step on the scale and you're like 0.3 or 0.4 over, what that hour is or 2 hours is like.
Yeah. So, Ronnie, it's not normal. It's not something that happens very often.
Okay.
It is a big deal. You're going to have to pay. You're going to pay the commission. A percentage of your purse is going to go to the commission. A percentage of your purse is going to go to the fighter themselves, your opponent.
Isn't that crazy? Or,
and they don't have to. They don't have to take the fight. Right, that's so, one. That's a very important thing that we didn't talk about. Go ahead, Dan. Conceição could have walked away that night, not fought, walked away from the weigh-in, got paid his full purse. Walked away, got paid his full purse, didn't have to fight.
Well, why did he fight?
I'm sure Top Rank and ESPN will probably give him a little side cash and we're like, we need this show to go on.
Yeah.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Don't give away the secrets.
It's always money. Money's the fixer of everything.
Don't give away the secrets. Everybody's like, oh, you made this much money in a fight. I'm like, that's what was in the paper, but yeah, sure. Whatever you think it was. Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Always more.
Anyway, there's always things. Anyway, so yeah, so he's gonna have to pay the commission, he's gonna have to pay the fighter. Conceição could have walked away that night. Conceição thought he was gonna be a world champion that night. He thought he was gonna beat Shakur the next night, decided to take the fight. I tip my hat to him. Oh, good for you, man. I love that. He obviously didn't get the job done, but no, whatever, he got paid. But yeah, no, it's not a common thing. It does happen. Floyd Mayweather did make weight once. Do you remember that, Dan?
Which fight was that?
Did not make weight once. And then I think he was not far off at all. It was less than a pound. And he said, oh, I'm not doing that.
Which one
I'll
was
pay
that?
Whatever. It might have been Marquez.
Yeah, that was at a catch weight.
Yeah.
At that point, when it's not a title on the line, I think that was his first or his last fight before he, like, his first retirement. Or maybe his first fight back from his first retirement. But that's wild, right, Ron? You got to pay. You pay the other guy that you come up with a price, and you don't really see it too often. What about Chris? Like, have you ever gone on the scale and you're like 0.3 or 4 over and you had to go back and, like, what do you do?
A couple times. Yeah, so my world title fight against Ruslan, everybody who stepped on the scale for the unofficial weigh-in, but when we first got to the, like, 7 out of, like, 8 of us were all overweight, which is surprising to me, because the only guy who wasn't was Ruslan. So we were all scrambling, like, oh, how are we over? Like, and then whatever. And I just literally, my cousin ran across the street to Old Navy, which we're at the Barclays Center, and there's an Old Navy right across the street. And he bought me a bunch of hoodies, and I put those on, and I sat in the guts of the Barclays, and I jump rope, and I shadow box, and I chew gum, and I just broke a sweat, and then I stepped on the scale.
Chewing gum?
Yeah, chewing gum and spinning.
Take a fat dump.
Wow. Yeah,
old school stuff. Made the weight. The Pacquiao fight, same thing. I had a lot of trouble with the cross world traveling, and the food that was available over there was really, really tough. It was very, very salty. So I had a little bit of trouble pulling the last couple pounds, and I stepped on and I was like 0.3 over, and everyone was like, oh my God. And then I literally just went to the bathroom. And I came back and I was like 0.4 under. And everybody's like, oh, such a, like, what, they're like, what'd you do? And I'm like, trust me, you don't want to know. It's not
took
the big
a point
deal.
Four
like,
dump.
Yeah. It wasn't, guys, it's not that. I was like, I was worried. I was like, I'm like,
my math's so bad.
I moved up a weight class. I'm not really worried about this. Is not a big deal. I came back like almost, they gave me 2 hours and I was back in like.
Yeah. When you missed weight against Pacquiao, I went on Twitter. I wasn't even on Twitter. I said, Chris Algieri, very unprofessional.
Very unprofessional. Huh. Didn't make the weight.
Guy has the shot of a lifetime.
For the first try. Yeah.
Shot of a lifetime against Pacquiao. He comes in 0.4 over. This guy's.
I think it was 0.3 or something like that.
Straight.
It was
great. He better go in the bathroom and take a dump, come back out.
I realized what it was. It was the last cup of coffee I had, because the coffee in Macau was
strong.
Really good. Oh, no, it was good. It was just really good. I was just like, oh, I'm like, I'm under. I'm so under. I'm good. Let me just have another cup of coffee. And like, I had an extra cup and I was like 0.3 over. And I was like, fucking coffee got me. And then literally everyone's like freaking out. I'm like, I'll be right back. Just, I don't, I never miss weight prior to that. And I was like, don't worry.
Well, coffee helps you go to the bathroom. So it worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have to sweat at all. It wasn't like I had to do anything, but it was embarrassing for me. But these guys who don't even try, I'm always like, I'm flabbergasted by that.
Right. It's like, guys will come in, Ronnie, guys will come in like 6 pounds overweight.
That's
super rare. Never happens in a big fight, but
it happens enough. It happens like more than it should. Like it happened a few times this year. I don't remember the exact guys.
A pound is a lot.
Like 5 pounds, 6 pounds. And it's like, you didn't do any of the homework. You didn't show up at all. And you just show up to the final exam and you expect to pass. It's like,
I don't think it's that. I think guys have a lot of trouble going like earlier in the week. Like, yeah, weight cuts can go bad. Weight cuts are very, very strict, and you have to follow a very specific protocol that literally the casuals will never, never, never understand. Even people who are in the sport will never understand. But yeah, it's very easy to miss by a mile. Missing by an inch is missing by a mile when it comes to making weight for a high level fight like that. So I say it all the time. Guys at the highest level, they're big. They're all big. Everyone's cutting a lot of weight. There's very few guys who are just showing up. Floyd Mayweather, they always say, oh, he didn't cut any weight. Yeah, he still missed weight before. Like, it happens. It's not, it's yeah, happens to literally, you know, the best. So
another good question from Ronnie from the casual corner. Is that all you got, Ronnie?
Three in a row, baby. Thank you for getting casual with me.
RIP Coolio. Remember, always keep your hands high, protect yourselves at all times, and stay out of the DM. Yeah.